Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
Welcome to the Luck on Sunday podcast, a weekly audio digest of all the best bits of Luck on Sunday, free to air every Sunday from 9 o'clock, that brings you the best guests and insight from around the racing world. Kim Bailey, who I dubbed on Tuesday evening the pride of Britain, but Dan Skelton firmly took that mantle from him after a couple of days. Great to see you here, Kim, flanked by Megan Nicholls, who's been doing duty with ITV all week but still looks pretty fresh, and Neil Channing, who is here. Kim, congratulations with Chianti Classico. How does it feel when you get to the weekend after Cheltenham and you're one of the few people who emerge victorious?
It was a fantastic week. I mean, extraordinary. If you win a race on Tuesday, for the rest of the week, you're hugely popular. I couldn't believe how many people wanted to talk to me after that. And it was great. It was a fantastic result. And to go on Tuesday night to be the only British train winner was something else. I mean, it would have been ghastly. It would have been Friday, but it was never going to happen.
And the Ultima habitually is a race where the Irish do give the Brits a bit of a squeak. You had two in the first four in the betting. Did you go into the race with huge confidence?
We certainly went into the race thinking we had a very, very strong pair of horses to go in. Chianti Classico has had a really good season. Everything's been geared up for him all season for it. Trelawne, it really is the apple of my eye. I think he's a very, very talented horse. We struggled to find the right trip for him because we wanted to go over 3 miles, and every time we wanted to find a 3 mile race, the ground conditions weren't suitable for him. So he was the inexperienced of the two. He's providing he comes back in one piece for next season, he's a very talented individual.
So you've got two really exciting horses to look forward to. Tell me a little bit about the human aspect of this. It seems to me that you, David Bass, the owners Francis Brooke and Richard Pilkington, that is a quartet that has come together and that you were particularly pleased with.
Yeah, well, the horse originally was bought at with Aidan Murphy, and I bought him at Tattersall's in Newmarket. Francis rang me up fairly soon after and said, you've known him for it, so I said no. So he and Richard Pilkington came and bought him. We thought he wouldn't get beaten his bumper first time out at Ascot, and he got beat by a horse that came from Germany. And he went on and won two bumpers, and in the following season he ran and won two hurdle races. But that's David loved the horse. He was absolutely in awe of his ability to be so tough for a small horse. We ran him at Cheltenham, which was probably a mistake too far really at that stage, because he probably wasn't ready for it. And he nearly collapsed afterwards. And we found that he had a major wind problem, which had never shown at home. So we operated that during the summer, and history will tell you it's been a revelation ever since. And he's just got better and better. That was a very good performance this week. It was a long clear of what he's done. He doesn't give the impression he's, looking at him, he really handled very heavy ground, but he does.
So that was your high spot. Megan, what were your highlights of the week?
Combination, I suppose. I was sort of, all the short press favourites, I was after a bit of a demolition job. And I think Ballyburn was just one of the equine stars, such an exciting horse going forward. But also, I suppose, on the other side of things, owners are such a huge factor. And to have Harry Redknapp, Sir Alex Ferguson, Jed Mason, and those guys all having some big winners, I think that was really special. Thursday, for me, was the most exciting day as a whole. I think the atmosphere that day was pretty special. And for all those guys mentioned, to have a couple of winners between them, that was probably the highlight for me.
Yeah, we do like to see people celebrate. We do like to see people enjoying it. Did you enjoy the Gold Cup?
I very much did, Nick. Yeah, for me, it was definitely a game of two halves. We had a lot of football this week. I was definitely 3-0 down at half time. But if the festival had started 4:10 on the Thursday, I'd have had a brilliant week. The jukebox man was perhaps a slight low spot for me. That was painful. My mate was watching it on the steps there somewhere, And he said, the bloke behind me said, oh, God, imagine if you'd bet that. And he had backed that. So, yeah, we were definitely thinking about that. But I did notice during the jukebox, man, friend of the show, Philip Davies, did you notice that? He was getting in the shots a lot. He seemed to be hanging out with Harry Redknapp, and he was in the background of every picture, looking absolutely distraught and totally mortified. He must have done his absolutes on it, which I found quite sort of... I liked it in the way, you know, the whole kind of David Bass, Kim Bailey thing, that racing can unite people. You know, Philip Davies and I would not agree politically on many things, but we managed to suffer collectively over the jukebox, man. So that was a kind of a funny part of the week. But no, it was a good week. I actually think going into it, people had been quite negative about the festival. Coming out of it, you never have a bad festival, do you?
Although the talking points list this week does seem to be that bit longer than it often is. And Ian Renter, the managing director of Cheltenham Racecourse, will be along at around about 10:45 to chat with us about some of the concerns that you've raised and some of the high spots out of Cheltenham. Let's have a look back at the Gold Cup itself and a second consecutive win for Galopin Deschamps. It's quite something to become a multiple Gold Cup winner. Willie Mullins has now done it twice, first with Album Photo, now with this horse. And Paul Townend equals Pat Taft's record. I mean, that in itself, Kim, is something before we even start picking apart the race.
It's extraordinary. I mean, the history will tell me. Best Mate won it three times. And to come back second year run on this ground, I mean, this horse was so brave. Watching the race halfway down the hill, I thought he wasn't going to do it, and beautifully ridden. Yeah, you can see why the combination is so great.
And in terms of actual achievement, I was reading Martin Green with the BHA Handicappers blog last night, and he sort of says, I could only give him a mark of 174 for this. But was almost half apologetic in so doing. I think he feels that he's valued for a little bit more than that. It was a very efficient performance, wasn't it?
It was, and, you know, they've ridden him with sort of more positive tactics this year. The stamina wasn't so much the issue. His jumping's got slicker as he's, I suppose, got more match practice. And he just looks such a straightforward and finished article type of horse now, which is crazy because he's still young. I think there's still plenty more to come. He's got seasons ahead of him yet. I think the main thing with Galopin for me is, you know, he's had some battles. He's really, last year's Gold Cup was a proper match. He obviously then went to Punchestown. He was beaten on his return as well. But mentally, I think he's very strong. He comes back out. He's there to you know, go to war again. And I just think you can't beat a horse that's as tough as him. He's kind of got the same mentality as like a Denman. You know, he wants to win, he is flat back, drops his neck, and he really, really tries so hard.
And he is much beloved of so many people who've backed him so many times at the Cheltenham Festival. He won the Martin Pipe Conditional Jockeys race off a mark in the low 140s, 8-1, would you believe it? Then, of course, tipped up in that extraordinary instance at the last, the following year, when he would have won by miles, and now it's two Gold Cups. So it's a nigh-on unimpeachable record at the Cheltenham Festival, but for that one tiny mishap. Brilliant winner of the Gold Cup, Galopin Deschamps. Runs in the colours of Audrey Turley, who I think we can check in with now. Audrey, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. And lo fela Podrick, son of Ditch. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Absolutely, happy St. Patrick's Day. We get fooled into thinking it actually falls during the Cheltenham Festival, but it in fact is, of course, today. And it is lovely to see you, particularly with that wonderful trophy. I'd love to know, you own some beautiful horses, this one comfortably the best. I'd like to know why horses have played such a special part in your life, Galopin or no Galopin.
Well, I think throughout our lives, really, horse racing has been such part of the social fabric of Irish life for many, many years. And both Greg and myself remember very well being going to horse racing meetings throughout our childhood. It was always a big event, a fantastic day out, a family event, and we've always enjoyed it. And then Greg's dad, many years ago, had some success with horses. And Greg decided he would like to try his luck at it too. So that's when it started for us, really.
And it strikes me, Audrey, that you have been an absolutely willing passenger on this journey, more than a passenger now, a kind of co-pilot on this journey.
Well, I'm not sure about co-pilot, but we've always been so supportive and just very honoured to be part of this fantastic and dynamic team. I mean, it's incredible, really, and you feel very privileged and humbled indeed to be part of it. And particularly on such a memorable occasion as winning the second Gold Cup in the centenary year. I mean, it's just remarkable, and it's not every Sunday morning you wake up to that realisation of what's just happened. It's incredible, really. And it's hard to put it into words, really, Nick, I have to be honest.
Audrey, you're doing a brilliant job of it. You've spoken very warmly about this horse particularly. He's not just a name. He's not just another name on an illustrious honour roll. You seem to have captured him as a personality. Say, I want to snuggle and cuddle him all day. You really love this animal.
We absolutely adore him. We always have. I mean, he's just a beautiful personality. He's brave. He's strong. He's kind. He's like a little pet when you meet him in Willy's, I have to be honest. He loves to play with his ball in the stable. He comes out as such a hero and a legend when he's racing. He loves to race, he loves to jump, and he loves to win. And he just adores all his fans. Really and truly, it's remarkable to see it. He enjoys people so much. After the Leopardstown Gold Cup win, he stood in front of the hundreds of people, probably thousands of people there, and just enjoyed and soaked up all the admiration he was getting. And I have to say, it's so lovely that people have taken him to their hearts and enjoy him so much as much as we do.
I said after the race, Audrey, my initial reaction was, this is the day a good horse became a great horse. I wondered whether you had a sense, great though he already was for you, that it was a day where he elevated himself into a sort of another group, really, a special group, to have done something that so few horses can.
Absolutely. You know, an uncle of mine who has sadly passed said to me a while ago, I think he's another Arkell. And to be put in with names such as Arkell, it's incredible. And Galopin Deschamps is certainly now in that group.
Audrey, I want to talk a little bit about the experience of owning horses with Willie Mullins, because everybody likes to win, and people say, well, why do people have so many lovely horses with him? Because they like to win, and he's the best trainer, and he's the best at training Cheltenham Festival winners, 103 festival winners now. But I'd like to know a little bit about the personal experience of having horses with him and why you enjoy it, beyond just success on the track.
So we like to visit Clissutton regularly, as regularly as we can. And when you visit Clissutton, have you been, Nick?
I have, and I've only been a couple of times, and both times I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I bet you wanted to stay there forever, which is how I feel when we go down. And I mean, it's just the whole experience there. Everybody who's involved in Clissutton has always been so friendly, so kind, and so generous to us that you almost feel like part of the family. And it's just the beautiful atmosphere down there. I think it's being around all the horses, the chickens, the ducks, the dogs that live down there. I think animals are so important. I think they make us all much nicer people. And I think that just the feeling of it is just warm, cosy and beautiful.
Audrey, you summed it up so beautifully today. Can't wait to see Galopin Deschamps again. Can you give us a positive bulletin on how he's come out of the race?
He's great. His wonderful groom, Adam, reported back to us and reports to us regularly, and he's all is good. He's in great form. I hope he had a few carrots as a little treat. And it's all good, Nick. So, wonderful experience, really. Fantastic.
I want to say good morning, however, to an owner that experienced the highest of highs, and I won't say the lowest of lows, but an agonising and narrow defeat during the week. Shake 'em up, Harry, was superb in the Trust of Trader Plate, and the Jukebox Man very nearly made it a dream double. Harry Redknapp is with us now. Morning, Harry.
Nick, good morning.
When you reflect on those two performances, are you as proud almost of your runner-up as you are of your winner?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I went there, Nick, you know, we all had the dream that we Cheltenham, you know, I've dreamed of going, having a runner at Cheltenham for many, many years, let alone having a winner and a second. So, You know, and I didn't, honestly, I didn't go there thinking, yeah, we've got a great chance. This is, listen to Ben on your show just a week or so ago, Ben Paulin, and he felt that Bow to Greatness was probably our best chance his best chance of a winner. So, yeah, it was, you know, we went there with chances, but not confidence that we could actually win a race. So to have a win on a second was amazing.
They're both very easy horses to warm to as well. I mean, Shake 'Em Up Harry had had everybody tearing their hair out for a little bit. You know, close, 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 not quite getting the trip right. We're not sure whether he's a 3 mile or a 2 mile or a 2.5. He seems to have clicked with Ben Jones, though, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And I think, you know, the trip has just been right for him. We went to Newbury and he travelled better than anything in the race. You know, and that was 3 miles and he just run out of steam. It's, I think 2.4 seems to be his trip. Having said that, we've entered him for the national. Ben, if we get in, Ben feels he'd have a, you know, he'd have a decent opportunity at the Grand National. So we'll have to wait and see. But at the moment, to win there on Thursday was just an amazing feeling, you know.
And the Jukebox Man, I mean, that was probably the most dramatic race of the week. Just tell me how you were feeling from sort of two out to the line. Well, Talk me through that whole range of emotions.
I couldn't believe how well he was. You know, he'd gone off in front, Nick, and I thought, well, he's, you know, I think Ben said, you know, before the race to Keelan, you know, sit him handy, fifth or sixth, following round, you know. And suddenly we jump off and he's in front. I thought, oh, well, what's happened here, you know? And he kept going and never under any pressure never came off the bridle, really. Travelled great. And then jumping the second last, when he stretched away, I thought, well, hang on, suddenly he's gone four clear, five clear. And I thought, oh, my God, this is unreal. And then that last 100 yards was, it seemed to be an eternity. He started to tire, he started to wander. I think he lost a bit of concentration and the other, you know, Gordon Elliott's horse came alongside and nutted us right on the line, you know, incredible. But it was a great run, a fantastic run. And next year, I'm sure we've got lots of fun to look forward to with the Jukebox Man as well.
And Harry, I know you were. It was a wonderful interview with Lydia after the race, and I know you were joking about only telling Sandra you had a couple of horses in training.
Yeah.
The red, white, and blue had just gradually started to expand and expand and expand and expand. Was that something that you were very conscious of? You wanted more horses. You wanted to get more stuck in, or has it happened a little bit by accident?
I think it's happened by accident, Nick. You know, it's. We gradually see we've got more horses, and I do, to be honest, I think it's like everything. You can have, you know, I've got quite a few horses, and I think maybe it's time to look and cut back a little bit and try to just go with a bit more quality, like we've shown at Cheltenham. Because at the end of the day, they all cost you the same. So I'd rather cut down. I think I'm quite a soft owner. I don't like taking horses away from trainers. You know, it's not easy.
And your relationship with Ben Pauling is obviously a very good one. We've spoken quite a bit about why owners warm to particular trainers, why relationships work, and obviously everybody likes to win. But what do you get out of him in that relationship?
Well, he's bought three horses in Ben for me, and they've all been amazing. So I've had a great time, you know, with him. And but I love all this, you know. I couldn't say a bad word about anybody who's ever trained for me, to be honest. I've had a great relationship with all of them. You know, they all love the game. They love their horses. I went back to the pub after Thursday night with all the stable staff, and we had a party back at their little local pub in the village where Ben lives. I stayed the night at Ben's house ready for racing on Friday. And It was just amazing, you know, the joy that it brings to everybody, the boys and girls. And next morning, I was up early on Friday morning, and they're out on them horses at 6:30, and they were all singing from the night before still. So it was a lovely feeling to see what it means to them.
A Welcome back. Reflecting on four fantastic days at the Cheltenham Festival, all talking points and many of your questions answered later in the programme with Ian Renton, the Jockey Club Managing Director at Cheltenham. But we are going to celebrate the heroes of the week before then, and two men flew the flag most earnestly for this side of the Irish Sea. They were Dan and Harry Skelton, of course, with four winners apiece, two grade ones, two brilliantly campaigned handicappers. Dan, Harry, good morning to you both.
Morning.
Morning.
You're looking very, very serious this morning, but there's the serious business of the Trainers' Championship ahead, Dan. We'll come to that in a little while. But in a sentence or two, just sum up how you feel this Sunday morning after what's probably been the most extraordinary and dramatic week of your life.
I firstly feel very tired after last week. It was just a cauldron of emotions. I don't really know what I was feeling at any time. It's just great to be able to watch it all back and remember what it felt like. I remember just being there when Langadan won and just thought to myself, just remember this, remember what it feels like, because sometimes you walk away from there and you can't even remember what it was like. You just get so caught up and full of adrenaline. But it was remarkable. The one thing I feel most of all, though, is pride. I'm so proud of what the horses and the team have achieved. And I was so proud to watch Harry ride them like the way he did. In a normal year, he'd perhaps been leading rider. Maybe we'd have been leading trainer in a normal year. But when Willie Mullins is around, anything is but normal, I'm afraid.
Harry, I want to ask you, and because you're not sitting in the same room, and I don't even think you're sitting in the same house this morning, can you not spare Dan's blushes, please, and tell me why this enterprise has achieved what it has?
I think determination, to be honest, Nick, and just hard work. And it's taken us a while to get here, but I think that's down to our father. He installed that into us from a very young age, and he had to wait 58 years for his dreams and everything, but it just shows you just got to keep going. And you need to be led by a very good leader, and we've got that, and we've got a great team around us also. So there was a lot of decisions had to be made last week, right races and with a few of the horses, and Dan got them spot on, and they were in the right races.
And I'm guessing sometimes, even though it's a big team effort, you have to look to the bloke with the name on the licence to actually stick his neck above the parapet and say, no, I'm going to run this horse here.
Ah, for sure. At the end of the day, his name's the one on the dotted line, and he's the one that steers the ship. But that ship, gets driven by a lot of people. But Dan will tell you that, and there's a lot of people around that make it happen. But at the end of the day, to run Protect Rat in the Ryanair and to run Grey Dawn and in the Turners at the end of it all. The buck stops with him, so his final decision, and they were in the right races.
Once you'd made those decisions, Dan, were you ever doubting yourself? Did you ever think, oh God, I'm not sure I've done the right thing here?
Last Saturday, when it was a dry day, when we were all at Sandown, I'd walked Cheltenham on Friday and convinced myself that the Grey Dawning was correct for the Turners. And I'd seen every forecast there was and sort of come to the conclusion that that was correct. And then was there on Saturday and getting reports of a dry, clear day, the ground turning good to soft at Cheltenham. And there was just a minute's wobble there. But I knew the forecast was coming for Sunday and Monday. And that just cemented the decision. Protectorat was a very easy decision to make, to be honest with you, because the obvious evidence was we're not hitting the Gold Cup standard. So, stop trying to push on a door that you just cannot open. Grey Dawning was a little more complicated. I'd have fancied him in the race on the Wednesday in the Brown Advisory. Whether we'd beaten Factor File, hopefully we'll have a go at him one day. But Factor File was very authoritative, and I think once he crossed the line, I was quite happy that I was running on the Thursday. So, sometimes the coin lands head up, sometimes it lands tails up, and it just worked for us this week.
Have you ever known Harry ride Cheltenham better or with more confidence?
No, I haven't. And I felt that the first two rides there, the Langadan and Unexpected Party, they were just so seamless. They were, you know, he made them. It looked like it was a foregone conclusion when you watch it back. But he made, you know, only a good jockey can make it look like it's that comfortable. And I think that was the springboard to the Thursday. You know, the Wednesday going as well as it did, you know, obviously just brought the Thursday into sharper focus. I know Ruby was very complimentary about Harry, and you know, Ruby's everybody's hardest critic. You know, he set an extraordinarily high standard around Cheltenham himself, so he's every right to, you know, to discuss rights and wrongs of rides around there. But I just felt that once Wednesday had gone as well as it had, you know, Thursday had an even better chance of going well. And to be honest with you, Harry will tell you, like, Grey Dawning was like plan A the whole way. It never once deviated from what needed to be, and that's just a good rider on a good horse.
Harry, then talk us through how plan A just was never deviated from, and how straightforward this Turner's Novices chase appeared to be for you.
Yeah, well, when you win, it always looks straightforward, doesn't it? You have to have the horses. But I'd just gone through that race in the Turners, and it worked out exactly how I wanted it to. I knew Harry Cobden would go, you know, good strong gallop on Ginny's Destiny, and I could sit in behind him and just follow him. But I think probably when I got beat by Ginny's Destiny back there in the November meeting or December meeting, I think the ground was a little drier and just got done almost into a bit of a sprint and made a mistake two out. So I didn't really want that happening again. And I knew sort of once I jumped four out the top of the hill that I wanted to get upside to Harry and just make sure I was there then. And, you know, Grey Dawning answered every question then. He was brilliant down over the last two, just idles then on the running. But I think this horse has it all, really. He's so unassuming. He doesn't know how good he is, but he just seems to find, I don't know, he just seems to find the racing all come quite naturally and easily to him. And at home, you definitely wouldn't see that of him. But hopefully he can go all the way, and he's just that little bit special.
So, Dan, do you think this is your Gold Cup horse for next year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we've got one, it's him. He's always looked special. He won two bumpers. I was very disappointed that he fell at Aintree last year in a Grade 1 novice hurdle because I thought he'd win. But that's water under the bridge. That's in the past. You can only look forward. And, you know, sometimes horses learn, well, not sometimes, all the time, you know, horses are learning from their mistakes. Humans are learning from their mistakes. And I think that, you know, we're shining the pebble even more with Grey Dawning by, you know, sort of giving him plenty of racing. You know, he subjects himself to sometimes difficult situations by hanging left a little when he gets in front and making that mistake against Ginny's Destiny. But, you know, it's when they're doing things like that, it means that there's room for improvement. If they just go around on the bridle, win five lengths, of course, that's great. But, you know, they're not actually... Where's the improvement coming from? You know, all the horses turn up at these big festivals 100% fit. So there's no fitness angle coming to improve on. Yes, there's age and strength and everything else, but you can see a horse like Grey Dawning. He is just still learning a bit as he goes. So he's going to have to go a long way yet. Like we know the standard that Protectorat is and doesn't, you know, and isn't able to win a Gold Cup. So we know how high we've got to go. And, you know, we're three parts of the way there, but we're certainly nowhere near the top.
And Harry, Protectorat, I know it's a lesser group of horses than it would have been in the Gold Cup, but was my eye deceiving me that he just seemed to be going and travelling and finishing with a sort of terrier-like enthusiasm that we haven't always seen?
No, that's fair to say, but I think a good call, really, dropping back in trip to 2-5 and a real strongly run race helped him, but he's never that easy, this horse. He could be quite headstrong in a lot of his races, but, you know, just suited... you know, last Thursday that they went really strong, so he just settled in behind them. He was flat out, but that's the only time he does settle is when he is flat out. And yeah, once I'd sort of straightened up and I'd sat against him the whole way down the hill, and you know, I had momentum turning in, and once I straightened up, then I felt Envoy Allen come to me. But when I jumped two out, I thought, if he's not going by me yet, he's going to struggle to get by me. So I knew I'd stay real well. And once I jumped the back of the last, like, he was real brave then, and geez, he took off after the back of the last and really hit the line strong.
That's a lovely moment there. I didn't think John Hales was going to let you go, Harry. That's a long association that goes back a long, long way.
Yeah, it really does. And John's a great man, and, you know, he's a great man for the sport, and he's been, you know, a long connection with our family, and, you know, he absolutely lives for it, and he loves his horses, and great other connections that own the horse, but John Hales is one in a million. He's the best winner, but I'd go as far as saying he's the best loser of anyone. And you know, you could certainly learn a lot off John Hales.
In Ireland, Willie Mullins is as dominant as he is here, of course, but. It was a really good week in the final analysis for Gordon Elliott, because nearly everything he ran well. He emerged from the week for the first time since 2020 with more than one Grade 1 winner, which I'm sure will please him very much. He won with his marquee horse in a Grade 1 race, Chupo. He had an excellent second in the Gold Cup, and any number of horses ran well through Tuesday and Wednesday, and he's on the line now. Gordon, good morning.
Hi, Nick, how are you?
I'm extremely well, thank you. What was the single thing that pleased you most during the week?
I suppose to get a winner, Tape, who was the frustrating first couple of days. But yeah, just all the horses ran well, I suppose. You know, hit the crossbar with a loss, but you know, to come out with a large number of horses running well was very happy with.
Having a look at Chupo now, he just looks a very, very honest and straightforward and classy horse. What do you think might be his future? Do you see this being his game forever now, the Stayers Hurdle?
I think for the time being, yes. He suits the race. He's a really laid-back type of horse. He doesn't take too much energy out of himself. So, yeah, look, we'll probably look at going back to Punchestown and all being well, and maybe going the same path again next year, you know, two or three runs of the season again.
Why do you think he's so much better with breaks between his races?
I'm not sure, to be honest. You know, he's probably not the biggest robust horse in the world, so maybe he doesn't need a whole lot of racing, but look, he's very honest and we're very lucky to have him.
And you called that right early on this season when he won that race early in the year. You said, we'll save him off for Cheltenham. And now you're someone who likes to run their horses as well.
Yeah, when I kind of said it, I wondered maybe, should I have? But look, it's worked out great. You know, his form suggests that he runs well with a nice break between his runs. So I think we'll keep doing what we're doing. He's done us proud so far.
That Albert Bartlett was, I think, possibly the most dramatic race of the week. We've spoken to the vanquished Harry Redknapp. Good to have the victorious Gordon Elliott with us. Stellar story. Could he be a horse that really scales serious heights? What type of horse do you see him as?
I think he's going to be a nice horse. Obviously, he's won a Grade 1 now. He's probably going to be more of a big stayer, kind of a national horse, than... maybe a proper Grade 1 horse over fences. But look, if he keeps improving, you never know. But we won't get too excited at the moment.
Did he surprise you a bit?
We thought he was nice. To be honest, I was actually going to keep him for entry. And Wednesday morning, another horse that I was to bring over had a little setback. So I put him in the box and brought him over. So he wasn't intended runner, if I'm being honest. I'm not going to sit here and say it was the plan. The plan was to go to the 3 mile and entry with him. But I'm glad I kept with him.
And better days ahead. I know it's not the most high-profile race of the week and all the business seems to be done and dusted, but I felt that meant more to you almost than anything.
Look, it was great for the Moans of Dexter Stud to get a Cheltenham winner. They're big investors in the game and they're massive supporters of Cullen Tra. You know, Noel and Valerie, they're great sports people. You know, they do a lot for sport in Ireland and especially Meath. The sponsor football teams and everything, and they've been very keen to get a Cheltenham winner, and you know how hard it is to get it for them to get it. It was just ultra special, especially the last race. I thought it was another year gone with no winner for them, so yeah, it was thrilled for them.
And the winners spread around. You've got some exciting young riders coming through the ranks. We saw Sam Ewing. This is Danny Gilligan. I suspect this might not be his last taste of the big time.
I'm very lucky. Obviously, Jack Kennedy is first jockey, and then we've got Jordan, Sam, and then Danny is our claimer, and we've a couple of other lads as well. Carl Miller didn't make the festival this year, but you know, Danny's a few more winners left in his claim. But it was a great bunch of lads, just keeping them all going and holding on to them all would be the biggest problem, I suppose.
And you were second in the Gold Cup and the champion hurdle with Gerry Colomb and Irish Point. Has either of them ever run a better race, do you think?
I'd say Gerry Colomb was probably definitely a career best. An Irish Point, like, you know, he probably is more of a stayer than a two-miler, but just the race, the way it was working out, we had to roll the dice. But yeah, we were delighted with both horses. But I was really delighted with Gerry. Like, the winner is very, very special. The loose horse done us absolutely no favours. You know, we'd have never won him today, but we might have been a length too closer. And I think it was definitely a clear bet.
I thought the horse looked so up for it in the preliminaries. He was sort of on the muscle and really alert, and he sort of went through the race like a horse who was right on his game, Gordon. Do you think he's attaining some of that mental edge, mental maturity that perhaps he was lacking when we saw him both earlier in the season and last year?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think even with another summer crash, he's going to be better. Like, he probably jumped his best throughout the race on Friday, but I still think he needs to learn just to come down and get from A to B a little bit quicker. Like, if you look at Gallup and the Champs, he's a lot quicker through the air than we are, but now it's getting better the whole time. And whether we run him again this year or not, I'm not sure. If I do, I'd imagine it'll be Punchestown entry to come a bit soon. But if not, it'll be all distance for the Gold Cup again next year.
And what will Irish Point do next?
I'd love to go to Aintree.
You want to get Aintree for the 2.5?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know Brian Acheson has earmarked Bob Ollinger for that as well, but I'm sure
two
he wouldn't mind
camps.
being double-handed.
Two different camps. So I have to worry about my horse and Henry will worry about his. So obviously in horse racing, as you know, to get the two of them there, it you know, things can happen. So Brian has it well covered, I'm sure, and we'll discuss it all near to the time.
Welcome back. The debate is alive and well here in the Luck on Sunday studio, I can assure you. Neil Channing, Kim Bailey, Megan Nichols with me. 2002, so what are we now? 22 years ago, this was the finish of what was then called the Christie's Fox Hunters Chase. And liveried in her father Robin Tate's silks, Fiona Needham drove Last Option to a famous victory. In front here against some of the best hunter chasers of the day. Gunnar Welburn, that is, in the Two Shades of Blue. Torduff Express on the outside. And here comes Fiona bisecting them. Two out, one to jump. And Last Option it is that clung on for a wonderful success. This feels like yesterday, Kim. This could be 22
scary,
years
it?
Ago.
It's scary. I promise you, 30 years ago, it feels like yesterday.
I was there in Tats, chalking up prices on
this
race.
You were the best mate enclosure?
No, I was in Tats by then. I'd moved up market. Lost more money.
£10 then in those days.
Well, there is something quite special about winning a Fox Hunters in your family silks, on a great horse, Last Option. Do you ever think then, right, well, in 20 years' time or 22 years' time, I'm going to train the winner, same silks, obviously different rider, with a wonderfully tenacious grey mare, Sine Nomine. What a double that's been for Fiona Needham. She was in disbelief then. I imagine she was somewhat less in disbelief on Friday, but just as elated. Great memories past, great memories from this week. Needham lives the dream again. Of course, we know Fiona well through her work at Huntingdon and latterly at Catterick. It was the Hurworth point-to-point, I think, yesterday at Hutton Rugby, where celebrations, I'm sure, will have been continuing, because that was the hunt where this mare qualified. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, celebrations did continue, definitely.
That must have been very special yesterday, being able to effectively take her home and for everyone to enjoy what I'm sure was a hugely important success for the point-to-point world.
Yes, it was wonderful. And we actually took the trophy down and everybody was in... The sun was shining and everybody was in a great mood. And it was, you know, it was just wonderful for Yorkshire Pointy. And she's now going to prove never work with animals and children because she's bitten me.
She is obviously in rare health and rare form after this amazing performance. Tell me a little bit about the journey to the Hunter Chase on Friday and how it all came together.
Well, to be fair, we bought her as a stall She was only a little weedy thing, but she's always shown a lot of ability. And once she got her act together in point to points, you know, she became a bit of a winning machine. She was a bit of a star. And then she obviously won the John Corbett at Novice Final at Stratford last year. And to be honest, I always had this plan. And I said, we go to Alnwick first time out, then Wetherby Hunter Chase, and then to Cheltenham. Didn't quite go to plan in the fact that we got beaten at Alnwick, so a bad training performance. And then we went to Wetherby, and actually, on the way there, we were having a conversation, and I was saying to my dad, she's got a double penalty, and don't expect, you know, don't be worried if she gets beaten. And he said, okay, when she gets beaten, we'll go handicap chasing after that. And obviously, she won that very well, so the dream was still alive. And on to Cheltenham. Yeah, she did us proud.
Didn't she just? I'd love to know what you were thinking. As a past winning rider of the race, what you were thinking when John was having a look at burrowing his way up the inside of Derek O'Connor coming to the last.
He sort of found out there was a gap, and then, you know, they sort of came over a little bit, and the gap was closing rapidly. And she's not the biggest mare, and I was sort of panicking a little bit. And then when he switched her, I thought, well, that's game over. And she landed after the last, and I thought, well, that's good. That was a good run, you know, but you're still trying to tell yourself that. And then, to be fair, she just started to motor and stuck her head down, and I blew up running up the hill, but she didn't, fortunately.
Our connection is threatening to get the better of us, but I'm going to try and stay with you just for a little while longer if I can, because I do think this was one of the stories of the festival in many respects. You talked about maybe taking her away from Hunter Chases and going handicapping. Is that still a possibility, or is this where she belongs now?
Well, I don't know. We haven't really thought about it. Don't know what the handicap will do. I managed to get a raised stone at Wetherby, so I'm not very good at this handicap malarkey, I don't think. No, we'll see. We've seen how she comes out of this, and we've got several options on the table. But like I say, Friday was the plan, and I haven't really thought beyond that. So I'm having to put my thinking cap on. But she'll have a little bit of a rest now, and we'll take it from there.
Do you think she'll run again this season?
We'll see. We'll know in a week or two. To be fair, she seems to have come out of it quite well. She's now got bored of us. But so I would like to, but we'll you know, she'll tell us. And it's very much, it'll depend on what the ground does, because I wouldn't want her to run her on too quick a ground. When she won at Stratford last year, it was just plenty quick enough for her.
And for you and for your family, just try and sum up the feeling of doing it again after doing it the first time all those years ago. Does it feel better to have trained than to have ridden the winner?
It was a lot more nerve-wracking, I have to say, because when you're riding, once you get out there, you're calm. But when you're standing watching, it's a lot more nerve-wracking, as I'm sure Kim will probably tell you. I think it was a bit more real. Certainly my dad, when I won on last option, I think it took about 3 days for it to sink in with him, because he couldn't believe he'd done it. Whereas we were, you know, I thought she would be placed. To win was obviously a dream, but, you know, we went with a bit more hope, should we say.
So Ian Renton is here with me now. Ian is the managing director, the regional director of the Jockey Club Cheltenham and the South West. Ian, just first of all, I know at the end of every festival, you and your senior management will have a big wash-up meeting. What do you think will be the first item on the agenda this year?
I would think probably car parks. It's obviously been one of the more difficult weeks we've had for car parks. It comes around every 6 or 7 years when we do have conditions such as we've had this last week. And there's been, not surprisingly, a fairly negative reaction.
Is there an obvious and fast solution? Kim and Neil were both saying that you'd wanted to concrete them, but it was a bit of a planning issue.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would want to concrete them. I don't particularly like trashing the countryside, but there's never been an option of being able to put hard standing on 70% of our car parks because they are in the green belt and we wouldn't be allowed to do that. So there is no easy solution, I'm afraid, or we would have put it into place a long time ago. We spend a lot of money now every year on trackway when the conditions are such they are this year. But I would love to find, and we will carry on investigating, a more permanent solution that does meet the planner's requirements.
What was your response to the suggestion earlier in the week that there hadn't been enough agility in the forward planning and that really you should have been prepared for an adverse weather forecast?
I was extremely disappointed, particularly for our team, who'd put so much effort and hard work into it. The planning goes back months when we try to get as much sort of temporary trackway as we can to the course. We make that decision in January when things are looking pretty wet. We informed all our racegoers that if they could avoid coming, they should not come, and we would be refunding them if they had bought car park labels, and advising them that if they hadn't, we wouldn't be admitting them on the day, which is not easy at Cheltenham because obviously the transport infrastructure is not as good as you'll have if you're a London-based venue or something. So we do everything we can to accommodate them. But I thought some of the criticism was made without knowledge of the true facts.
Just coming back to Neil's points, I don't know if you heard him, talking about ways in which Cheltenham can work with rail companies, local authorities, to make the situation better. And he talked particularly about park and ride and getting people in from big towns, Swindon, Oxford, Gloucester. Where do you stand with that at the moment? And could you explore plans to increase and enhance that, to take away the traffic stress from the course?
Yes, I mean, it's something we've looked at regularly. And interestingly, I went for a day or two to the Ryder Cup outside Rome, which I felt the infrastructure there was very similar to Cheltenham in that they purely had park and ride and were transporting people on buses for 40 minutes to an hour to go to the venue and very, very few people parked at the course. It is something I think is a potential solution, very difficult to implement because we've talked to racegoers and many other people coming to the racecourse. It is the last thing they want to do. Racegoers are probably creatures of habit. They love to come and park at the racecourse. And it is not an easy solution. We're talking to the council who are building a multi-storey car park on the west of Cheltenham, which will have 1,000 places, to try and reserve that for the festival when it is completed. So we certainly look at all areas like that, but we've also got to look at what our customers really want.
Ian, what did you make of Julie Harrington's statement about British racing and what needs to be done with it, released just a day after the Cheltenham Festival had finished?
Yeah, I agree with parts of it that, you know, we really do need to work incredibly closely with DCMS to improve the funding. And, you know, we are facing material headwinds at the moment due to the affordability checks. And that is something we've got to sort. We've got to get more money into the sport in the UK. But looking at the other side, you know, we are looking at one man, Willie Mullins, who has proved his brilliance now for several years, and as a result, is attracting the best owners with the best horses. And that is something we always say is cyclical. This cycle has been lasting a little while.
Speaking to Nevin Truesdale earlier in the week, the chief executive of the Jockey Club, his sort of suggestion was that the Jockey Club is reasonably happy with the race structure at the Cheltenham Festival. Now, this will be debated and debated and debated some more. In your view, have you got the numbers right, or do you need to make a few little nips and tucks to increase the competitiveness of one or two of those Grade 1 races?
Yes, I mean, we will review all the races as part of the wash-up process, and if there is something, either a particularly weak race or we feel is impacting adversely on other races, that will come into review. Mm. It is interesting, when we were looking at the sort of 4 or 5 day debate, we got a very strong message from our racegoers that they wanted seven races per day. So if we were to consider one race is too weak, we probably need to replace it with another. And that potentially could create a bigger problem than we're solving.
Why do you feel that crowd numbers were lower this year? And why did it take quite so long to really drive interest in the festival, particularly the first 3 days?
Yeah, I don't think it's taken long to drive interest. I mean, we actually had in the build-up, I mean, we go and sail for next year's festival tomorrow, and the early sales leading up until probably November, December were well ahead of any other year. Yeah. So I think there's a huge amount of interest there. I think where we hit the blocker is our devoted racegoers want to come racing, attracting new racegoers who want to come as a one-off, maybe every second, third, fourth year, to experience what we hope to provide as a really great event. They were the ones who felt the economy is looking pretty tough this year. Mortgages have gone up, fuel bills are high, and certainly the economic environment was all the messaging we got back as to why people were not filling the last few thousand gaps we had.
The major grumbles in terms of people attending the festival, Ian, seem to surround ticket costs, particularly in areas like the Best Mate enclosure, which has habitually been, you know, an affordable enclosure, and that's been its USP, and not a particularly pleasant experience in certain part of the race courses when the afternoon develops, antisocial behaviour with drink and drugs, and slightly more restrictive policies around letting people move around the track, you know, more checks and so forth. How do you balance keeping people safe and happy and in a convivial environment with giving everybody a good time and allowing them to feel, you know, freedom at a sporting event?
Yes, I think, you know, you've mentioned two things there which, in essence, are sort of contradictory, because if we are to try to ensure best behaviour for all our racegoers, which is something we are passionate about, we have to have some form of enforcement, checks on arrival, checks on drugs on arrival. And I know, you know, it is important to maintain that level of security. So that is essential to try to maintain the behaviour we would like to see from 100% of our racegoers. And that is something, you know, we ensure that those people who, and it is a very, very small percentage who misbehave, we have a zero tolerance on that and work very closely with security and the police to ensure that's enforced.
Ian, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much. And thank you for excellent days of racing.
Luck on Sunday. Brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.